a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Well, Turkey has been in the spotlight this year, from massive earthquakes in February to NATO membership debates to the recent re-election of President Erdogan. All of these events have big implications, not only for Turkey on the world stage, but also for us right here in the United States. Someone who's been in the middle of many of those conversations and events is the United States Ambassador to Turkey, Jeff Flake, friend of the program who joins us on Inside Sources. Let's begin.
Think you know the news of the day? Think again with Boyd Matheson on KSL News Radio.
Turkey is increasingly playing an important role on the international stage, from NATO membership to Ukraine and Russia battles over shipping lanes. We're really pleased to have back on the program once again the United States Ambassador to Turkey, Jeff Flake, to discuss both the aftermath of what's been happening after the traumatic earthquakes and also the aftershocks of the recent presidential campaign. And Mr. Ambassador, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
As you continue to travel around Turkey and interact with your colleagues and counterparts there, give us a quick update and a sense in terms of the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes.
Well, obviously, it's been devastating. As you mentioned, we spoke about it before. 50,000 plus dead in Turkey and 10,000 or so in Syria. So they're still obviously recovering. It's kind of a different phase now. Everyone is in either tent housing or container housing with relatives or friends of those who are displaced, which are numbers in the millions. But they're rebuilding. Turkey builds fast, and they're rebuilding.
That's such an important thing. Give us a sense in terms of some of the needs there on the ground, things that you're interacting with from a government space. We also had Bishop Christopher Waddell of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who I know you visited with when he was over there working on some of those containers and some of those needs. But give us a sense both from the government standpoint and then kind of the NGO, nonprofit, faith-based groups that are helping out in that recovery and that rebuild.
Well, from the government standpoint, they want to make sure that this kind of devastation doesn't happen again, and that involves building to a higher standard than buildings have been built to before, and changing the way some of these cities look in these earthquake-prone areas. For example, I think residential buildings, and Turkey is very much vertical living. People live in apartment complexes here, and I don't think they've built a single-family home in 50 years anywhere in the country. But they've been usually high-rise apartments. Now, I think the highest residential housing will go to is four stories. So government is busy, with that aspect. In terms of the nonprofit sector, container housing is still going to be used for a while. As you mentioned, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is building a couple of container cities almost, as well as field hospitals. And it's not like there's triage still needed, which you might think of with a field hospital, but these are hospitals that replace hospitals that were leveled in the earthquake and are still going to be needed until new hospitals are built. And I think the church has actually built three of those field hospitals for the Turkish government and then turned them over. So it's been just heartening to see what people have done. Another Utah connection, Davis and Ajaline Smith from Cotopaxi were here to visit us. And he mentioned that the good folks at Cotopaxi, a Utah-based company, had contributed over $100,000 and they did more than 100,000 in sleeping bags. And wow. So more than 250,000 total just from one company for earthquake victims here. So it's really been heartening to see.
Yeah, that's great. It's amazing what happens when people can come together that way. It also just shows that resilience of the people of Turkey, their desire to rebuild, as you said, fast and to continue to move forward. Such an important conversation to be having there. And I want to shift now to the other rumblings in Turkey. Of course, the presidential runoff recently took place. Give us a sense of how that played out and then what that means moving forward.
This in Turkey, President Erdogan has been the head of state either as prime minister or president now for just over 20 years, and he just won another term, a second or third, depending on how you count it, as president. So he's the longest serving Turkish leader, even more than Atatürk, the kind of founder of the modern state of Turkey. It was a bit of a surprise to many people here. Polling had the opposition winning, but President Erdogan won the initial election by just under 5 percentage points. So he's just under 50% that forced a runoff. That was held on Sunday. And in the end, it was 52-48%. And so it's the inauguration of the parliament will be tomorrow. I'll be there, as well as the swearing in of the president on Saturday.
That's an important thing. So give us a sense of what does that mean first as it relates just to the relationship with the United States?
Well, President Erdogan has kind of staked an independent path, if you will, playing a brokering role between Russia and the West, basically, in the war in Ukraine. Turkey has been very helpful in things like the grain deal, allowing grain to pass through the Bosphorus Straits and negotiating that deal with Russia. No country but Turkey could have done that, and then they did a good job with it. And they've also provided support in Ukraine. Turkey is a NATO member, longstanding, 70 years, and they have provided a lot of commercial sales of drones and other military equipment, but also have been a staunch supporter of Ukrainian sovereignty. Turkey has not imposed the same sanctions on Russia that the rest of the West has. It causes some consternation with some in the West. We're always pushing Turkey to do more in that regard, to stop the transshipment of items to Turkey, which they have done. And so we're continuing to work with them, but they have quite an independent foreign policy here.
Yeah, clearly. And as you mentioned, that shipping lane in terms of the grain was such a crucial thing early on that, as you said, only Turkey could do that Black Sea grain corridor. That just simply would not have been possible by anyone else. What are some of the other things that are sort of on the horizon now? Some say this is, you know, a consolidation of power, and this is not good for the future of democracy in Turkey. What is your sense overall in terms of kind of the day-to-day? What are the people sensing there in the country?
Well, it is a strong presidency, and some will say that President Erdogan, the opposition, maintain that he has too much power here. Some have questioned whether a free and fair election could be had. Let me just say that, you know, government here obviously has the advantages of any government in power in terms of patronage. And you know, you can certainly practice a populist measures, and then they have that benefit, certainly, and maybe not a level playing field in that regard in terms of freedom of the press and whatnot. And we express those concerns all the time, as does the rest of the Western world. But having said that, on election day, Turkey runs a free election. There were some in opposition circles, I guess, who were responding to people internationally saying that it wasn't a free election, and even the opposition who lost said, yes, it was. I can tell you, it was quite refreshing to me, coming from Arizona in particular. I thought it'd be nice to have a few politicians have that that kind of equanimity, where they recognize, you know, the playing field may not be completely level, but in the end, you have to trust elections. And in Turkey, the turnout was 88%.
Wow.
2 weeks ago, and then on the runoff election, it was 85%. And that's without compulsory measures either. And so this is a country in which there is suspense during elections. So you don't know the winner. And so we in the United States, obviously, will work with whichever government is elected by the will of the people. And we're determined to work with this administration here, this government here, to work on items of mutual concern.
Yeah, so important. And what a great lesson. More than a few lessons there in terms of who actually showed up to vote and the confidence that winners and losers both had in the process is real important. Very quickly, before I let you go, Ambassador, I just want to circle back. You mentioned Turkey's longstanding space as a NATO member. What does this mean, this re-election of President Erdogan? What does that mean for Sweden and their application to become part of NATO?
That's a great question. That's one that is of immediate concern, obviously. President Biden called to congratulate President Erdogan and raised that in the call. Turkey approved Finland just a few weeks ago, so they're now a full-fledged member. But Sweden still needs assent of both Hungary and Turkey. And we expect that that will happen soon. Sweden has taken significant measures to address the concerns. And let me say, these are legitimate concerns that Turkey had in terms of tolerance for terrorism. But those measures have been taken. Just today, June 1st, a constitutional change in Sweden will take effect, giving Sweden the ability to crack down on terrorist financing that Turkey had insisted on. And so they have, we believe, Sweden has done everything they need to do to become full-fledged members, and we've encouraged Turkey to move forward quickly, at least in time for the NATO summit in Vilnius in July.
Fantastic. Wonderful insight, as always. Again, Turkey is such an important part of the world, playing an important role in so many different ways. And Ambassador Flake, we appreciate your leadership and your efforts there on behalf of the United States as well. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, and thank you. And thank you to the good people, like I said, of Utah, who have stepped up, in disproportionate ways to help with the earthquake. It's been gratifying to see. And much appreciated on this side. It really has been.
Important conversation there with the United States Ambassador to Turkey, Jeff Flake. And again, Turkey is going to continue to play a pivotal role in a crucial part of the world and have reach into many other places as well. And we appreciate the ambassador making time for us on a busy day today to give us some perspective in terms of that connection all the way back here to the state of Utah and many of the efforts that have been helpful following the earthquake.
Think again on Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.